Crossroads East Dublin.
90.3.
This is Near FM.
I am delighted to be joined on this Monday morning by Simon Morta, who is the Senior Policy and Research Coordinator with Oxfam. And we are going to talk about something which doesn't surprise me and doesn't shock me, but yet it is something that we should know and we should talk about, and we should drill down as to why and how it has happened. And that is the fact that billionaires, and I presume by extension millionaires, have increased their wealth, and in some cases, by the way, doubled it during COVID-19, while at the same time 99% of people in the world have seen their incomes decrease. Simon, good morning. That is not a great opening salvo, I would put it to you.
It's not. Good morning. It's not, but the report which actually came out last Monday, which is called Inequality Kills, and it's quite a stark title to the report. But for people who want to read it, and they can easily download it on the internet, they just have to search for Oxfam Inequality Kills. There's a lot of hope in the report as well. I mean, for all its kind of devastating statistics and findings, there's a vision in the report that we can end poverty, and that comes across quite a lot. We have the means, and indeed we have the wealth, to build new systems across the world where we could see world-class health systems and much better distribution of medicines such as vaccines for COVID-19, a much better way of organizing our world economy if we could use the resources that we have much better. So I would say the headlines are disturbing and they're very upsetting in some places, but you know, not least because of technological changes, because of the way we developed vaccines so well, our scientists and our researchers did, and we've got the means to make the world a much fairer place. So that's in the report as well.
Now, just as a sort of a segue into this, and people should know that I set up this interview with you last week, but towards the end of last week, I saw a couple of reports in various media outlets, Simon, where, and you referred to it there, Davos is upon us again. But, you know, there was billionaires from around the world saying, and millionaires as well, saying that they wanted to pay more in tax to help the less privileged. But the one thing that I noticed, Simon, I haven't seen any government anywhere jumping up and down and saying, oh, this is brilliant, let's do it.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, sometimes you find that the governments are the last to kind of come round to progressive ideas. And when millionaires and billionaires are ahead of them in wanting to pay their taxes, you know, that kind of, it's amazing to see. I mean, some of the headlines, there's a couple of groups which support us. One is an American group called the Patriotic Millionaires. And they're calling, you know, I think the headlines in the newspapers were, you tax us now, because they actually realize that the amount of money they have is stupid. They can't even use it. It's devastating the world in lots of ways, from straight poverty of the poorest people in the world to climate change. I mean, one of the things about extreme wealth is that they create way more times the carbon emissions than normal people do because of the lifestyles of very rich people. For both those reasons, in order to save humanity and save the planet, in a sense, the groups of millionaires are actually forming and are calling to be taxed in a more fair way, which is interesting to see that it should even reach that level. And in the report, there's a woman called Abigail Disney, who comes from the Disney family in America, and is herself a very good progressive filmmaker. And she writes the preface to our report. And you know, if anyone wanted to read one page of the report, I'd advise them to read that, because she really lays it out why, again, extreme wealth is out of control, needs to be taxed, and could create a much better world if that were done.
Yeah, and the other side of it as well, you see, is, you know, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. And, I mean, no matter which way you put it, there's only and for people, by the way, who think about wealth as being cash, pound notes in your pocket, that strictly is not true. Wealth can take many, many forms, but generally speaking, wealth for countries is balanced against their gold reserves, really and truly. You know, I'm getting really technical here, but I'm going to try and condense it down a small bit. But the bottom line, the point I'm trying to make, Simon, is that there is only so much money in the world. So if the top 1% are doubling their grasp on it and their possession of it, it means the other 99% are losing on the other end of the scale. And that is, I mean, whatever about rich people getting richer, that's fine. But when rich people get richer are making poor people poorer, that's where the problem is really coming in.
That's right, and that's the kind of extreme inequality that we've been tracing. And, you know, the economic researchers who lead on this over the last decade or more have really been able to see the extremes at each end increase to incredible levels. And as you say, there is finite wealth in the world. There isn't enough that should keep increasing at the highest levels. And indeed, it's not even, you know, we often talk about the top 1% versus the top 99%. But in fact, it's even within that 1% you see the really extreme wealth of billionaires, which is taking up a huge amount of the planet's resources, its wealth, and its carbon budget, if we want to talk about environmental issues. So what we did in the report was look at, one, the extreme surge in billionaire wealth, which has actually been the highest ever during the pandemic. The pandemic had certain effects which made that wealth increase exponentially. But then at the other end, we looked at how this affected poverty throughout the world. So, you know, Oxfam would try to work with the poorest and most marginalized groups around the world. And then we looked at other effects of poverty as well, healthcare in particular, the effect on women. Gender is a big focus for Oxfam. We see how these inequalities, in a way, are multiplied. So when there's extreme wealth, there's even more extreme poverty, and it hits the groups that we know get hit the most, above all women in developing countries, healthcare, which is always so fragile in poorer countries. And we see disastrous results as a result of that those extremes on both sides.
I'm going to talk to you about that in a moment as well, Simon, but I just want to put this in perspective for the listeners this morning, because despite rumours to the contrary, I do actually do a little bit of research for these programmes. Now, here's a brilliant way of explaining things, because I mean, yeah, we can kind of get our head around the concept of what €1 million looks like. But €1 billion, nah, we're governments are used to dealing in billions, and obviously billionaires are. But let me put it in perspective for the listeners this morning. 1 million seconds, okay? 1 million seconds is 11 and a half days, okay? 1 billion seconds. 1 billion seconds is 31 years. And that's the difference between millions and billions. And when you start looking at it like that, and when you take into account what Simon is saying about billionaires doubling their wealth in 2 years, by the way, in 2 years they've doubled their wealth, that is frightening, astronomical amounts of money.
It's incredible, isn't it? And it's also senseless, because it's wealth that you can't spend. I mean, when you look at the lifestyle of some of these people, they don't actually even hold any many assets. They don't need to. But their wealth is also structured in a way that it can't be taxed, and that's the next big problem that we have. One of the reasons that a lot of very high net worth individuals or billionaires, one of the ways in which they operate is they don't actually have an income. They only have asset wealth, and they can live from that. So not only is their wealth senseless and out of control, as all the statistics show, it also makes it very difficult to tax, and that's the next issue that we're trying to address, is new ways of taxing extreme wealth, which is of such levels that I think everybody across policymaking agrees that it has to be addressed in some way because of the inequality that this report shows.
I'll come back to that in one moment, Simon, because there's something that you touched on there that I want to go back to. And that is where some of these billionaires and millionaires have said that they need to pay more to offset, I suppose, number one, the wealth inequality in the world, but even more so, the climate change in the world. Now, we are seeing it happening in front of our eyes, Simon, and this is something in Oxfam that you would be very aware of, I would imagine. You know, they're talking about migrants who are economic migrants, and that's one aspect of life, and we're pretty familiar with that. But the next thing we're going to see, and we're going to see it pretty soon, I think, is climate migration, because of climate, because people can no longer live in the areas where they're living now, and that is not going to be a couple of thousand people on the move, that's going to be millions of people, and then we're going to really see the damage.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's something that we've always worried about for decades now, and especially in areas which are coastal areas and are threatened by, you know, most immediately threatened by the effects of climate change. So, you know, people have looked at South Asia, where there could be, you know, as you say, people cause to move in their millions. We do a lot of work on the east coast of Africa for everywhere from down from Kenya to Malawi and Mozambique. You see the increasing effects of extreme weather and these what they call compound weather events. So you get both flash floods and then droughts increasingly and causing people to leave their homes or leave their home areas. In Kenya, I think 2 million people in the last year have been displaced by these effects of climate change already. So yeah, absolutely, that's a huge part of our work. We have a plan, which, as people know from the Paris Agreement, we really must keep global temperature rise to 1.5 degrees Celsius, and then it looks like the effects of climate change could be manageable. But that will take a huge effort, again, across all countries, and all citizens playing their part to do that. If not, if we go to 2 degrees, which is the next size, or even above that, which is where we're headed at the moment, we just can't tell what the effects would be. And that includes, you know, people being forced to migrate in their millions by the effects of climate change, as you say.
Yeah, I mean, no, I'm not going to get into the climate change aspect because we'd be here all day, but I mean, it strikes me, especially coming from COP26, it puts the old saying in mind, Simon, Lord make me pure, but not today. You know, like we seen the British Prime Minister Boris Johnson getting up and making a fabulous speech and thumping and rip-roaring through what was going to be done, and then he gets on a private jet to fly back to London to have dinner in a private club and then flies back to Glasgow again. So, I mean, they're very good at talking the talk, but not so good when it comes to walking the walk. I mean, we see Germany are opening up coal mining again. I think I seen something the other day, is it 365 million tons of coal will be burning in China this year. I mean, when you see that happening right now, and then you look at the other side of the coin, where, as you say, 2 million people on the move because they can no longer exist in their homeland. It's like the wealth thing again, is one is not balancing out the other.
Yeah, that's right. But I think there's a lot of noise. I mean, we have such a 24-hour media at the moment that you hear various things about various different countries all the time. So I think what we have to do is create, you know, clearer accountability from our representatives and from our government. I mean, we have a program for government which has got a clear plan for climate in Ireland, that we should reduce emissions by 7% each year. It's easy enough to follow that, to look up the program for government on the internet, and then when next time you're speaking to your local TD or you're going to vote, you bear that in mind. You say, right, well, did you achieve that? We can trace that. So in many ways, of course, what you say is true, and it seems like there's this disconnect between what we need to do and what's actually happening. The best we can do, I think, is be political about it. look and see what our own government is doing, first of all. Hold them to account from local levels right the way up, and at least then we're in action, we're doing something about the issue rather than just being at the mercy of the next press story that is so upsetting if we just read it and can't do anything about it.
Yeah, and the other side of it then is that, I mean, and this is really what I want to talk to you about, and it's hard to believe we're over 15 minutes chatting, and I really want to get to this part of it. You are calling for the Irish government to create or invoke a wealth tax. Now, tell me how you envisage that working, Simon, because I'm very, very interested in this. I have heard calls from opposition parties for many a long day now for a wealth tax. So tell me how you envisage that happening.
Yeah, again, the knowledge of how to do that has increased a lot. And again, the technical means of it has increased because of the use of information technology, the ability to transfer data much more easily. So whereas in the past wealth taxes were more difficult to do, they're much more manageable now. That's the first thing technically. Secondly, you know, wealth taxes have run into lots of political problems before where their threshold was too low. So sometimes you had people who genuinely, you know, couldn't pay the tax, or they might have had land but they didn't have any realizable wealth as such. So in our proposal for a wealth tax, we set the threshold quite high, so people who are multimillionaires really would be the only people who would have to pay. And then we would do it on a graduated rate. So you would start with 1.5% a year for these multimillionaires. Now, what's clear from the economic research is that people's return on big fortunes like that is much higher than 1.5%. So we're not even taxing them up to the return on their wealth. So again, this is a very kind of reasonable form of wealth tax. But it would do a lot of things. Apart from raising revenue, I mean, again, people question how much wealth there is and how much you could raise in a tax from that. Our research shows we could raise quite a lot. I mean, it wouldn't change the economy, but the wealth tax that we propose in Ireland would bring in over 4 billion, with which you could do a lot when you look at something like our homelessness crisis or the parts of our health care which where their needs are so acute. So we could certainly use the revenue. But a wealth tax would do more, and we argue for one, you know, obviously not just in Ireland, but starting with the European Union, across the European Union, where it would act as a kind of better social contract, where we know how much wealth is out there, we track it. It's like a reporting law. We know how much wealth there is and how much can be used and distributed to places where it's needed more. So it creates a fairer kind of a fairer society and economy just by having a wealth tax that works. So there is a commission at the moment on taxation and welfare, and we put in a submission, but it's very much with that idea of not something which is shocking or violent, but which creates a better social contract overall.
And Simon, can I just ask you, it's sort of two questions rolled into one, and I want to ask you this way to give you a good run at the answer. The first question is, has this been tried anywhere else in the world? Now, at a rough guess, I'd say if it was going to be tried anywhere, it would be in the Scandinavian countries, but I leave you to answer that one. And the other one then, which you will hear trotted out time out a number, oh, if you tax the wealthy, they leave the country. So, number one, has it been trialled anywhere? And number two, did the wealthy leave the country when it was trialled?
Yeah, it's been trialled. I mean, a lot of European countries have had wealth taxes in various ways or in various forms. And you know, they haven't always been as successful as you would like, but they've been in a way implemented badly, and when they're implemented badly, they can lead to people leaving the country. That's true. So again, the point is to make them more modern and make them applicable wherever people live. I mean, our wealth tax proposals are based on citizenship, not residency, so that, you know, if you're an Irish citizen, you should pay this tax no matter where you are, and the same would be the case if you're a French or a German citizen. So, you know, it's not that the wealth taxes which exist and have been reasonably successful in the past still exist. I think it's in four European countries there are fairly effective wealth taxes. But the more modern the wealth taxes, the more successful they are. And the interesting place in which you mightn't think there would be a successful wealth tax recently was Argentina. And again, they brought in a wealth tax using the best kind of modern approaches to it. And they brought in quite a lot of money, I think $2.4 billion in the first year of their wealth tax, which again shows that this can be successfully implemented in a modern sense with the kind of fairness and technical approaches that we now know exist to do it.
And Simon, excuse me, you mentioned there that there's a committee sitting on this at the moment. Do we know, and that Oxfam and I presume the likes of Social Justice Ireland and many other groups have made submissions to them, do we know when a report may emanate from this committee?
I think during the summer, yeah. I think, you know, these things take a bit of time. So the deadline was only last Monday when we made our submission. So I think they will have a round of, you know, they'll compile all the submissions and then they will have a few public meetings and then actually issue the report in the summer. So hopefully not too long, because it's a Commission on Taxation and Welfare. Again, it's not a technical economic remit that they have. It's one which should look at improving our society across both welfare and tax. So it's something interesting for people to follow and look out for.
Well, I can tell you one thing, Simon, we will certainly be keeping an eye on it here. Simon Morta, Senior Policy and Research Coordinator with Oxfam. Two things, Simon. Number one, thank you so much for joining me this morning. And number two, and I think far more importantly, on behalf of everybody, can I thank you and the Oxfam organisation for the absolutely terrific work you do, because an awful lot of people benefit from your endeavours. So, Simon, on board counts, thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Don.
Bye-bye now. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
That was Simon Morta, Senior Policy and Research Coordinator with Oxfam. And you will hear other presenters speaking to Oxfam from various angles of this report, which was published in relation to wealth accumulation by billionaires and indeed millionaires here on Near FM. So keep an ear out for those as well.
Across Northeast Dublin.
90.3.
This is Near FM.